This afternoon, I'm with Stan Popioski, and Stan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, David.
I believe your background, you started out life in Stoke.
Stoke-on-Trent, yes, that's right.
And your father was a miner.
Yes.
Of Polish extract.
Yes.
And your mother was from Stoke itself, I think.
That's right. I always worked in the pot bank industry.
The pot bank, what was that?
Pottery.
Right.
We know them as pot banks.
Pot banks. All right.
So which you worked for Royal Doulton's.
Uh-huh.
As what they called a sponger.
Right.
Which she had a sponge and used to get all the marks off the pottery, the glaze.
Right.
Did it all alive.
Uh-huh. And an oat cake for a lunch at...
Oat cakes, yes. And Wright's pies.
Wright's pies. All right. And as a young lad, you were a bit of a footballer.
Yeah. I used to play for Stoke Schoolboys.
Yeah. And you played with Alan Dodd.
Alan Dodd, yeah. Me and Alan used to go every Thursday, I think it was, from school, catch the bus from Ball Green down into Northwood
right.
Stadium, do all the training.
Yeah. And then when you started work, you started out as an apprentice electrician.
Yes, I did. I started off as a sheet metal worker originally. I had to pack that in because it was affecting my ears. Right. And the doctor said if I stayed on much longer, I'd be going deaf. And I was a bound apprentice, which you had to sign a contract with the company and your parents signed one that they were going to look after you. So I had to get out of that. And then I went into electrics and I became electrician, qualified.
Right. But they didn't get their money's worth out of you from the apprenticeship because you then went out on your own, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. Well, I did me apprenticeship, and as soon as you do your apprenticeship and they want to pay you proper money, they make you redundant then, and
right.
You go out on your own as a qualified electrician and earn your money. So I went on and I was working for the MEB, Midlands Electricity Board. I used to work for them, and then they made me redundant. And then I went out on my own.
Right.
Yes, I started with the houses, redoing houses. And at that particular time, people used to be able to get government grants if they were doing the house up, if they wanted a roof on or whatever. And the builder, the main builder of the job, who was doing the job, was responsible for pricing everything up. So that's what I did. So I got where I not only did the electrics, but I'd got a builder to do building work and a plasterer to do the plastering and a roofer. So I took on the whole project. And you used to price it all up, submit it to the council. They okayed it and ticked it off, and that was it. You did the job, you paid all your people, and then the council went and paid. Not you, they didn't pay you, they paid the people. The check to the pit, and then you were knocking on doors, chasing everybody for money. No, it hasn't come yet, but you look through the window, there's a new carpet down and a new three-piece. And
so the hardest part of the job was getting paid.
Getting your money, yes. Yeah. And it was always my crib with the council is, you've got my name on that, on the headed paper, my quote, why don't you pay me at the end of the job instead of paying the people? Yeah. I don't know, they didn't seem to think that was reasonable.
And then a big life event came about and got you travelling off to the States, didn't it?
Well, yes. In between this, I'd done a little bit of singing, nothing to get paid for, but I'd done a bit of singing in a pub and things like that. And a friend of mine was a singer at the time, a guy named Jonathan Gold, who lived in Crewe. And me and John were knocking about all the time in the evening, and I'd go on the gigs with him, and I'd be doing some gigs with him. And we had the opportunity of my brother was living in California, and he got us one or two gigs out there in just bars, American bars. So we went over there, and it was in the 1984 Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And we landed on July the 4th, Independence Day. And we did a few gigs, and of course people were surprised because we did a lot of country and western music, Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard and Boxcar Willie. And the Americans in the bar were surprised, because when we got up on stage and we were singing like Americans, but then when we got down and stood at the bar, and everybody was amazed because we've got English voices, and because we just attracted a crowd round us and they were all talking to us. And then it was, well, come to our place, come play with ours. And so we travelled around for 8 weeks.
And it was especially the ladies that took a shine to you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they liked the English voice, and they all thought, do you know the Queen? And of course we did. We lived next door to her. Yeah, so yeah. You know the Queen. They all think you, because they think England's very small compared to America, isn't it? You know, which it is, I suppose. So they all think you live shoulder to shoulder with everybody.
Mm.
And because being two young lads, I was, I think I was about 30 then, 28, something like that. You just laid it on a little bit with the ladies, and you couldn't, they loved you. Mm. So we'd say, oh, come out, we've got a bar, can you come play our place? And that's what we did for 8 weeks.
It didn't all go smoothly with the ladies, though, did it? Didn't one of them get you into a bit of trouble?
Well, she took a shine to me, and I took a shine to her. And unbeknownst to me, she was married. And one day, I don't know whether you're referring to the shotgun.
Yeah, I am.
I never saw the shotgun, but my friend, John, says the guy came out after me with a gun. Now in America, they all walk around with guns. Oh, everybody's got a gun.
Uh-huh.
I think if you're American and you haven't got a gun, there's something up with you. Anyway, he didn't fire the gun, luckily, and I never saw anything. But I did see him again on another occasion at a nightclub that was in Beverly Hills, when he thumped me in the back. And nearly had me going over the balustrade of this upstairs there, where we were sort of dancing. And when I turned round, luckily we'd gone to the nightclub with a football team from Beverly Hills. And by the time I turned round, they got him restrained and kicked him out of the club.
Mm-hmm.
So one or two little skirmishes with him.
Yeah. And then after coming back from the States, you then had quite an interesting few years where you were a magistrate and also a licensee.
Yes, I was a licensee, a magistrate for 15 years on the Fenton courts, and I progressed to chairman of the bench, which is the one that sits in the middle. The uh-huh. chairman is the one that does the pronouncements.
Yeah.
You have one either side of you and one in the middle. It's just the more experienced one, and you've gone on courses. And I did that for 15 years, and I also did the licensing when pubs applied for building work or whatever they wanted doing, you would go out and check that everything had gone up to regulations. And another big thing then at that time was disabled people. Anybody that had a public house and they had alterations done, they had to have inbuilt for disabled people, mm-hmm. toilets and access to get into the place. So you'd basically had to go round and look at them. And during this time, I also got in with a publican. Now, he was quite a character of the town and he was well known, and he was a bit of a rough lad to handle. So me and Kenny were known as Salt and Pepper, or Chalk and Cheese, because I was the gentleman magistrate and he was the, I don't know what we've got, the Cray brothers, I suppose.
The enforcer.
Yeah, so it was a bit like the Cray brothers, I suppose, and some of the things we got up to. And we ended up with pubs. Kenny was already in the pub game, and I was dragged into it with him. And from there, once we parted company, me and Ken, I carried on with pubs. Sadly, he died a few years ago. And I went to his funeral, and the place, you couldn't get in the church. It was packed. Mm-hmm. And strangely enough, I used to do my own recording. I could do CDs, record them. And Kenny had me recording him singing My Way.
Right.
And they had that played at his funeral.
Ah, right.
Yeah, when they were coughing was going in, they spouted him up singing I Did It My Way, which was quite touching, really.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in there that didn't realise that he could sing. And he got quite a good voice. Uh-huh. Because he was always known as the rough and tumble, Kenny was. Nobody would argue with him.
And then about, was it 15, 17 years ago, singing really came back into your life, didn't it?
Yes. I'd got the pubs. And I'd wanted something else to do. But singing was always on the sort of periphery of my life. And one day I got a band coming to one of my pubs, and they didn't come, they didn't turn up. So one of my friends that had known me for many years said, why don't you get up? Why don't you get up? And no, it seemed a bit, I don't know what the word is, to sing in your own place. Mm. Anyway, they convinced me, so I did it. And I did 2 hours show there and then, with all the music and microphones and that. And at the end of it, they go, yeah, you want to do that for a living. And I started thinking about it. And I had one or two coaching lessons, should you say, or vocal lessons, and started thinking about taking it up. And that's what we did, or I did.
And subsequently that brought you to Wales.
That's right, yes, it was. We decided where I wanted to go, and I thought, well, I'd like to play around the coast of Blackpool and Llandudno and all that. So on once a week, we would trip off from Stoke-on-Trent up to Wales here with a load of promotional paperwork and knocking on the doors of the hotels. Because the hotels was where I wanted to go. I didn't want to go pubs because I saw hotels as I could sing hotels every night of the week. Mm. Whereas pubs, you'd probably pay. Pubs were places where regular people go every day, every night. Mm. But hotels were where people went once a year for a week or whatever. So in pubs, you'd only maybe play there 2 or 3 times a year.
Yeah.
Whereas, like I say, in the hotels, you could play every night of the week. Mm-hmm. So we headed up to the coast and we're knocking on the doors. And do you take entertainment here? Yeah, well, could I give you one of these? And suddenly, one person came out, showed interest, which led to me playing there. Which led to me playing another place and another place.
So Llandudno became the place that you really...
Well, not first. Blackpool. I did Blackpool for 7 years.
Yeah.
But there was only a number of places I played in Blackpool.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really want to extend it in Blackpool. My aim was Llandudno.
Yeah.
I really like Llandudno. And I could see myself settling there. So I did 7 years in Blackpool, various places I did there. And then we got a call from Llandudno, a place called the Hydro Hotel on the coast. And that one gig, can you come and play our place, the singer's let us down, or he's ill or whatever, can you come? So I tripped up from Stoke-on-Trent to Llandudno, did the one night, it was a Monday night, have your gear all set up for 7 o'clock on the stage.
And they wouldn't have known you as Stan, would they?
Nobody knows me as Stan, no.
Because your stage name was...
Marty Grice.
Yeah.
We decided that before we went up, and that was all my promo, all my in promo pictures and all that. It was always Marty Grice. So nobody knows me. From even to this day, there's still people now, although I haven't played for 4 or 5 years, they don't know me as Stan. They only know me as Marty Grice. And that can go from here right down south, because I played Warner Hotels. But I didn't do them all that regular. It was one or 2 year there. But the Warner Hotels was a very lucrative job to do, because it was a 2 hour spot on a stage. But I'd get the week down there. But it was a 600 mile round trip, that one. Hayling Island, I think it was called.
Right.
One place. Hayling Island, and they gave me a chalet. Then all my food was free, and all my bar, I got a bar tab free. And they go down on the Monday. I played on the Wednesday. 2 hour show on the Wednesday. And then I headed back down to Llandudno to do a gig on Thursday. Oh, it went again. So it was okay, that, but it was a 600 mile trip, but it was well paid. And it was more like an holiday than work.
Yeah. But you played all over North Wales, cricket, Llandudno.
Yes. I forget where I have played nowadays. I used to play a lot of golf clubs, some round here, which I've forgotten where they are now. Forgotten the name of them. In between here, Rill, and Prestatyn.
Right. Well, that'd be Rill Golf Club then, is...
No, not Rill.
Rhythlin or Meriden?
Meriden, that's the one. Yeah, yeah. Very strange place to get to. Going on like a cul-de-sac.
Yeah, that's
with
right.
Some houses, and I thought, well, how do they get a golf course in here? And squeezed in between these bungalows, you drove up to a golf course, a golf club, and I played there. But there's quite a few I played, and that one was from that came from a friend of mine, a guy named Bobby Gold.
Bobby Gold, yes.
Bobby Gold, a character of...
A real character, Bobby, yeah. Is he still singing?
But he became a very good friend of mine, Bob did, and we used to knock about together. We seemed to follow each other around, because, like, I do the Hydro Hotel on a Monday. Bobby would do Across the Road at the Four Oaks on a Monday. And then Tuesday, we'd swap over. He'd go from the Four Oaks to the Hydro, and I'd come from the Hydro to the Four Oaks. So we'd swap a gear over the road. So we did that in one or two places. The Evans Hotel was another one. Mm-hmm. And I think I got the Evans Hotel through Bobby.
Right.
I think they were after somebody, and Bobby must have said to, I think the owner was Eric Peter,
yeah. And the Evans Hotel, famous for housing the
spies
in the Second World War.
Yeah. Yes, that's right, yes. They must have been missing an artist for one night, so Bobby must have had a word with him. They got in touch with me, can you come and do a show? I saw Peter, I think it was then, who I'd never met before, but apparently it turned out that he came from Stoke-on-Trent, all his family did. So we got a bit in common.
And you sorted out his crockery for him as well.
Yes. Well, strangely enough, my son bought part of the company in the end. My wife worked there. The company went bust, I think, and my son bought some of the company. I didn't know he'd bought it. He just told me that he'd got this pot bank. Not on his own. There was a four or five of them. So, and it happened to be the crockery that Peter used. And for some reason, he liked it, and he liked it all the same. All the same, plates, cups, saucers, everything. And I said, well, I can get you that. I think, that's it. It closed down, and they weren't going to get any more. And he was a bit worried about it. So I said, well, I'm going down at home, back down to Stoke this next week. Do you want me to see if I can do anything for you? So he gave me a list of things that he wanted. And by the time I got down there, I went into the old warehouse up the back of the factory. And there was piles and piles of plates of what people want, what Peter wanted. So I rang him up from there, rang him up at the hotel and told Peter, we've got this here. And I ended up coming back, and the back end of my car was dragging along the floor by the time he'd got it. I think we spent about £1,500 in that day, that morning.
Yeah.
In there.
And for the last 10 years, you've been here in Rhyl?
Well, I've travelled about in Rhyl, or in North Wales, should you say. I've lived in various places while I've been here. But yes, I've played most of my stuff in Rhyl, and I've been down to Crickith, Portmaddock. Portmaddock I played in. Is it Green Acres down there?
I think it is.
The caravan sat Green Acres. Played down there at Portmaddock, I think it is. Crickith played. But the one in Crickith is called George the Fourth, and it was a sister hotel to the Hydro.
Right.
That's how I got in there. And apparently what the Hydro used to do is take on trainee managers working in the Hydro, train them up, then moved them out to other places. And there was a female manager that trained, and she was at the end of the training, they'd offered her, she said she was having the choice of two hotels. And I can't remember one, but I know one was called the Viking, I think, in Blackpool.
Right.
Down near to the Pleasure Beach. And she said to me, if I get this pub or that pub, would you come sing for me? And I said, yes, of course I'll come, as long as you pay me, I'll go wherever you want. Anyway, I don't know where she ended up, but I never heard from her again, and I never got to play down at Blackpool or Viking for her, but I very nearly ended up with that one, which was a shame, because it would have been a nice change.
And of course, you made many friendships, because people got to know you and coming back to the hotel each year, and they'd be looking out for you.
Yes. What used to happen is when I was doing, I got regular where I was working seven nights a week at the hotel. So I'd do one night, say at the Hydro, and then return the following day, pick me gear up, move it into another hotel, set it all up, do a sound check, make sure everything was working and everything was okay. And then I'd mainly go up into the lounge and sit and have coffee, or I used to love people watching, or I'd be sitting out at the front and just watching the day go by. And of course, the people who got to know me, there were a lot that go back there regular, maybe 2 or 3 times a year. So they'd be coming and chatting to me, and so it was. It became a lovely way to live your life, and I always saw it as I was on permanent holiday.
Right.
And it was a lovely place to sit when the sun was up, and you were like on the French Riviera looking out there. And I thought how lucky I was. All I've got to do is 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
All my, and all the hotels used to give me all my food. So I used to get my dinners there, my lunches there. All my coffee was free. All my coffee was paid for. Always people wanted to buy me drinks, although I'd never have them because I was driving. There was only one hotel. No, what? There was two hotels where I used to stay. One was the White House, which was a lovely pub, but sadly it was let go. But I used to stop there a lot, and also the Four Oaks Hotel. Mm-hmm. And that was the owner of the hotel, David Sherritt, still is the owner. David also had coaches, so he got there. He came from Chesterfield.
Right.
And he got a tour, holiday tour, in Chesterfield. So he used to book the people from Chesterfield and get them into his hotel. Oh. So he got the best of both worlds, because yeah. he got them there with the coaches, which he owned these coaches, and the hotel. And I became very good friends with David. And of course, after a show at night, he'd be wanting me to have a drink with him in the bar with all the guests. Mm. So I'd have a drink with him at the bar. And of course, then he'd know I wouldn't have a drink because of driving.
Right.
So he'd always make sure he'd got my room for me. Mm. So as soon as he says, "I've got your drink on the bar," I knew he'd sorted me a room out. So then we'd be sitting at the bar till maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, laughing and joking with all the guests. And they got up the next day and they'd had a fabulous day because they'd been with the owner all night and they'd been with the artist. So they thought, they went away thinking they were, I don't know, millionaires, I suppose.
And had a royalty, yeah.
Had a fabulous holiday.
Yeah.
So I think David liked that because the people like me. So David liked me mixing with the people.
Mm.
So then it became regular then. Well, come down, have your tea. So I'd go down there and I'd have my tea down there, sitting with the people in the bar. And
yeah.
And then every time I played there, more or less, I stayed there. But he was a good friend to me, David.
Yeah.
He got quite a bit of beer. And I did a spot out in, where is it now, out Chester way, headed back Chester.
Right.
It's in Wales, begins with a W. Can't think of where it is.
All right.
But Charlie Lansborough.
Right.
Sang there.
Uh-huh.
Lived there.
Yeah.
And it was like a stately home.
Right.
And the thing I remember about it was is that it was a very narrow sort of not looked after road.
Right.
With potholes and yeah. that. And then as it opened out, you came out, and it was a bit like The Prisoner with Patrick McGowan.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Port Marion.
Yeah.
Yes, because it opened out, and there was a ginormous chess set right in front of this mansion.
Oh, it's up near Buxton. Not Buxton. On the Chester to Whitchurch Road.
It's off the 55. I can't think of where it is. Oh, right. Something beginning with a W.
Can't think where that is then.
I know it if you say, but it opened up, and then, like I say, there was all these giant chess pieces
right
outside. And a coach company heard of me from playing in London now, and they were doing mystery tours.
Right.
And it was full of women. It was all women, no men, all women. And they were, the mystery tour was shopping. And this hotel happened to be the last place they stopped at the last night before they went back home from wherever they came from. And they'd heard of me and asked me, would I play for them? So I said yes, and agreed a price with them. And David, very kindly, we had a run out there to make sure we knew where the place was.
Yeah.
So he came out and he said, oh, he said, like, there's a separate gym, jacuzzi and all this. And it was quite an exclusive hotel.